Best with confidence.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up, we'll talk about the proposal to build a U.S. Space Force. What would it do? What would it cost? Is it legal to militarize space? And what are the consequences if we extend domestic militaries into outer space? But first, one listener comment. This one about the alternative radio program featuring the speech by Chris Hedges that we played during the last hour. Here's what one listener had to say.
Hi, my name is Maureen. I live in Plant City, and I'm calling to say that I think this speech by Chris Hedges, although it's an excellent speech, it's a really poor choice to play it on Election Day because it's very cynical and negative, and it will discourage possibly people from going out and voting. Thank you very much.
Well, there you have a comment that we received this morning from a listener. The Trump administration has announced a proposal to create a space force, a new separate branch of the military, by the year 2020. Right now, the military's responsibilities for space are spread among at least three organizations, the Air Force, the National Reconnaissance Office, and the Army. Establishing the space force would require Congress to pass new legislation. President Trump hopes to get that process started by asking for Space Force funding in his annual budget request next year. Then the administration will work with Congress to create the Space Force through next year's National Defense Authorization Act, which is an annual legislation that outlines the policies, responsibilities, and budgets for the various branches of the military. Congress recently passed the final NDAA for this fiscal year, 2019, on August 1st, but it did not include any language about creating a Space Force. We're joined now by Bruce Gagnon, who is coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. He's a co-founder of that group. Bruce is also a Vietnam-era military veteran, and 50 years ago, he was the co-chair of the Young Republicans in Okaloosa County here in Florida while volunteering on the Richard Nixon presidential campaign. And Bruce Gagnon, welcome back to WMNF. Great to have you here.
Good morning. Great to be on the show.
So tell me what you think about the proposal to build a Space Force.
Well, I think it's crazy. I think it's dangerous. It's highly destabilizing. It would guarantee a new arms race, which is why the aerospace industry, according to a recent Los Angeles Times story, worked hard to get the Trump administration to support the proposal. The aerospace industry views space as a new market, warfare in space as a new market where massive profits can be made. So in the end, I think for the citizenry, it means more instability, more destabilization of world political situation, and a massive drain on our economy. For many years, they've been saying at the Pentagon that Star Wars, the generic name for all of this war in space, would be the largest industrial project in the history of the planet Earth. Imagine that. I call it pyramids to the heavens. The aerospace corporations are the pharaohs of our age, and we, the taxpayers, would be the slaves. So some years ago, in one of the industry publications called Space News, they had an editorial saying, you know, we've got to be responsible corporate citizens. We've got to come up with a dedicated funding source to pay for all of this, and we have. And we're now sending our lobbyists to Washington to secure it. And they named it the entitlement programs that officially are Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and what's left of the welfare program. So these are the programs that the aerospace industry, the military-industrial complex, are targeting for defunding in order to pay for Space Force and war in the heavens.
Does the U.S. already have kind of a Space Force but divided up among existing military agencies like the Army and the Air Force?
That's correct. They have, each of those branches have a Space Command. So the Air Force Space Command, which has largely been the overall director of the operation with military space for some years. They're headquartered in Colorado Springs at Peterson Air Force Base. And in fact, right on their doorway, I've actually been there and seen it, is their logo that reads Master of Space.
Are there international treaties right now that tell countries what they can and cannot do in space when it comes to the military?
Yep. The United States and the former Soviet Union in 1967 negotiated the Outer Space Treaty, banning all weapons of mass destruction in space. At that time, both sides were worried about one or the other putting permanently stationing nuclear weapons in space. So they created that treaty. The problem is that treaty is out of date technologically today, because now they're talking about weapons of selective destruction in space, through space, from space. And so they need a new treaty. So for about the past 25 years, Canada and Russia and China have together been going to the United Nations, introducing a new treaty called PAROS, P-A-R-O-S. It stands for the Prevention of an Arms Race in Outer Space. The idea is, let's close the door to the barn before the horse gets out. This new treaty would update things technologically, include all these new systems, ban weapons in space. And so there's a vote taken at the General Assembly every year, passes overwhelmingly, and then it goes to the Geneva UN Conference on Disarmament in Geneva, where the United States and Israel have been routinely blocking this treaty development during both Republican and Democrat administrations for the last 25 years, which indicates that our government is totally under the control of the interests of these aerospace corporations.
Well, which industries are we talking about? Which companies and corporations are backing this idea of a U.S. Space Force?
Well, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Raytheon, General Dynamics, you know, all the biggies. They're all involved. They all get contracts to work on these technologies. And so they're the ones that are really making sure that there is no treaty, because that treaty would block their access to a new arms race where they could make massive profits.
We're talking with Bruce Gagnon, who is the coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space, and this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Bruce, what are some of the scenarios that could happen if space becomes a battleground for conflict between nations? Play out some of the scenarios that you and others have looked at.
You know, there's a really great film that explores this called Pax Americana and the weaponization of space. If you go to our website, which is spaceforpeace.org, spaceforpeace.org, and look in the menu, we have a section called Space Videos. And just scroll down till you come to this film, Pax Americana. It's done by French-Canadian filmmaker, and it's been shown all over the world in movie theaters and on public television throughout Europe and Canada and many other places, but never shown in the United States. He couldn't get any kind of distribution deal for obvious reasons in the United States. But he starts out showing how if there was a war in space, because everybody is dependent on satellites today, both for military and civilian operations. So everything from your cell phone, your cable TV, your ATM machine, street lights, I mean, virtually everything the government does is hooked up now to satellites. So if you start blowing up satellites, you create so much space debris, space junk, orbiting the planet at 15,000 miles an hour, that what you have is a cascading effect where soon one satellite gets blown up, it creates debris, it crashes into another, and before long, literally, the planet shuts down. It's really an amazing reality that few know about. And so this is, first of all, the gravest danger of all. And in 1989, you know, I used to live in Florida for 30 years, and I coordinated the Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice for many years. And we used to organize routinely protests at the Space Center. And in 1989, we had a protest there, and astronaut Edgar Mitchell, one of the Apollo astronauts, the only one to ever come and speak out against war in space, came to speak at one of our protests. And he said, if this was to happen, if there was war in space and all this space debris would be up there, there would be no way to clean it up, no way to get rid of it, and that we would be literally entombed to the Earth. We wouldn't be able to get a rocket through this minefield, or as he called it, a piranha-laced river. And so this is really an environmental problem if you start thinking about it. And the space powers have not done a good job of making sure that we don't contaminate and pollute space with so much debris that it becomes uninhabitable. But that's what we're on the verge of now, making it virtually impossible to use.
We're talking about President Trump's proposal to create a Space Force, a new separate branch of the military by 2020. And our guest is Bruce Gagnon, who is the coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. And this is WMNF 88.5 FM. Bruce, you said that 1967 treaty really speaks against militarizing space, but it's out of date. Is it true, though, that other countries like China and Russia already have, they have programs to militarize space, too, don't they?
Yeah, they're about 30 years behind us, both in terms of quantity and quality, but they're closing fast. There is no doubt about it, because they've said, look, we'd prefer not to enter an arms race. We'd prefer to spend our money taking care of our people. I don't know if you're aware, but in Russia, in the last 2 years, they've cut their military budget dramatically, while the U.S. today spends about 35% of the world total of military spending every year. Russia spends 4.8%. And so, you know, they're not nearly where we are today, but both Russia and China have said that we're not going to let you think that you can control and dominate space. At the U.S. Space Command, they published in 1997 a document called Vision for 2020, where it said that we, the United States, 5% of the world's population, will control space, we will dominate space, and we will deny other countries the access to space. Well, of course, this violates the UN treaties that says space is the province of all humankind. Nobody can claim ownership of any of it. Nobody can try to restrict anyone's access to it. But so those countries are not about to let the United States think it's going to be the master of space. But they have tried repeatedly and continue to try to say, look, let's don't step over this cliff. But the United States just ain't listening.
President Trump hasn't been real specific about what he wants. What do you know about what he's proposing for this new Space Force?
Well, they're talking about orbiting battle stations, being able to target any place on the Earth from space, systems like Rods from God, which would be these essentially orbiting satellites with tungsten steel rods that could be fired from space, picking up massive speed as they re-enter Earth, come towards Earth, and then would be used to hit targets underground. They would actually go underground and try to take out Russian or Chinese nuclear forces. So it's part of U.S. first strike attack planning. The Pentagon annually has a computer war game. I've read about it several times in magazines like Aviation Week and Space Technology over the years, where they annually plan a U.S. first strike attack on Russia and China. They call it the Red Team versus the Blue Team, and they try to take out as many of Russian nuclear forces, Chinese nuclear forces, as possible in this first strike attack. And then when those two countries fire any remaining retaliatory capability, the U.S. uses these new missile defense systems, which are misnamed because clearly they're part of this first strike attack program. They're the shield that would be used to pick off a retaliatory strike, giving the U.S. a theoretical successful first strike attack. And today, these missile defense systems are being deployed on both land and sea, encircling Russia and China. U.S. has been very aggressive, starting during the Bush administration, then in the Obama administration, and now in the Trump administration, very aggressive deploying these things. Missile defense used to be outlawed in a treaty between the United States and Russia called the ABM Treaty, the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. During the Cold War, we had this thing called MAD, Mutually Assured Destruction. Both sides could destroy each other. And in a way, in a crazy mad way, it created some stability. But both sides signed this treaty, the ABM treaty, because they knew that if either side ever developed so-called shield missile defense, then they would have an advantage and an incentive to try to attack first. So when George W. Bush became president, one of the first things he did was to pull the U.S. out of that ABM treaty in 2001. And so since that time, the U.S., again, during the Bush administration, during the Obama administration, now the Trump administration, are deploying these missile defense systems surrounding Russia and China. Those two countries are saying in return, hey, wait a minute, we can't afford to continue to discuss reducing nuclear weapons now because missile defense puts us in jeopardy. We've got to hang on to our retaliatory capability to make sure you don't attack us in a first strike attack. So this has really killed nuclear disarmament negotiations, this U.S. deployment of missile defense that is part of this whole Star Wars program.
But wouldn't the argument for having a missile defense shield is to prevent an attack, let's say from a nation like North Korea, if it decided to launch one of its new missiles, the missile shield would shoot down or stop that missile from coming over to the U.S.?
North Korea, let's say at the most they might have 5, 6, 7 nuclear weapons. They're not going to attack the United States. They're not suicidal. They've never invaded anybody. Look at the long history since the Korean War. Who is North Korea invaded? Who is North Korea attacked? How many countries has the United States invaded and attacked since the Korean War? I mean, it's
so you're saying these missile shields are enabled the U.S. to launch a first attack on China or Russia. If the U.S. gets really scared, we could launch a first attack and be protected from their incoming attack.
Well, this is, you know, if you listen to the scientists who are experts on this kind of missile defense technology, what they're saying is the places that the United States is deploying these systems is not aimed at North Korea or Iran. They're aimed at Russia and China. And it's very clear that that's who the United States intends to go after with its missile defense deployments. And so those countries are also very clear about it. For example, the U.S. recently deployed a missile defense system in Korea, in South Korea, saying that it was being used to protect against North Korea. It's called Theater High Altitude Area Defense, THAAD, a ground-based system. And there are many different kinds of missile defense systems, again. And so this particular system, its job is to hit a missile in the high altitude, all right, and they deployed a radar there that can see thousands of kilometers in either direction, essentially spying on China and Russia, the Russian territory from that particular position. Now, THAAD, the scientists are saying, would not at all help with any North Korean missiles because any missile fired from North Korea into South Korea, because of its proximity, would be flying at a low altitude and would not reach the area that this so-called THAAD system, a high-altitude missile defense system, would be used for. And in fact, its only value, these scientists say, is against Russian or Chinese missiles. And so it's clear over and over again that the U.S. systems, its deployments, are aimed at Russia and China.
Our guest is Bruce Gagnon. He is the coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. We're talking about President Trump's proposal to direct the Department of Defense and the Pentagon to immediately begin the process to establish a space force as the sixth branch of the armed forces. And this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. If you want to ask Bruce a question, you can call us up, 239-9663. That's 813-239-9663. You can also email your question into us here. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. Right now, there's still a lot of activity with NASA. Does NASA do any work to support the militarization of space?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. NASA was originally created, its charter as a civilian organization, but that was done really just to mollify the public. From the start, from the outset, everything that NASA does is dual use. Every mission they fly is serving both military and civilian purposes at the same time. So many of the technologies that they have developed over the years while they may be applicable to a civilian operation, it also has military implications. Just one example, some years ago, NASA launched a mission to go circle the moon, and then from this orbiting spaceship, they fired a missile into the surface of the moon. They said they were wanting to see if there was water under the lunar surface. And so this missile then came from, you know, the orbit around the moon, fired into the surface of the moon underground. Now, could you not use that same technology to orbit the Earth and fire that missile into the territory of Russia and China and try to take out one of their underground nuclear weapons? Well, of course. And so these are the kind of examples that we see where NASA is being ridden by the military in order to develop these technologies in a much quieter way.
I think the supporters of this idea point to a Chinese experiment a few years ago where they blew up one of their own satellites as a way to justify the U.S. involvement in military in space, that they say that the Chinese, well, tell us the story, because you probably know it far, far better than I, but, you know, that's the argument, that the Chinese did a practice run on one of their own satellites, and that's what the U.S. Folks fear over here.
Well, the U.S., it's called an anti-satellite weapon, an ASAT, something that the U.S. and Russia have been working on for many, 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 many years. The idea is to be able to blow up the other guy's satellite during times of war, because every military today uses satellites to see, to hear, and to target the Earth for warfare. And so if you can take out somebody's satellite, you blind them. And so China, after all these years of trying to get a treaty to ban weapons in space and all the statements by the U.S., know that we're going to control and dominate space, China launched an anti-satellite weapon and blew up one of their own satellites, creating more space debris. But it was a warning, clearly a warning to the U.S. that you think you're going to be the master of space. Forget about it. We ain't going to allow it to happen. And even if we have to shut down this whole damn space thing, we're going to not allow you to do this. And so soon after, the United States took an Aegis destroyer that are built in my town where I live now in Bath, Maine, at Bath Iron Works, and they're outfitted with missile defense interceptors. The U.S. took one of those Aegis destroyers, a Navy ship, and fired one of these interceptor missiles from this Navy ship into space and blew up one of its own old satellites. And as a signal to China and Russia that, hey, look, we can do this too. We're tough guys. We can play this game too. And so everybody now, the United States, Russia, and China, and India is even working on anti-satellite weapons. So it's spreading like wildfire. And again, all the more reason why we don't want to have any kind of war in space, because, again, if you start blowing up all these satellites, you're creating all this space debris, and it's going to shut down everything. It's going to shut down people's ability to talk on a cell phone, because that satellite-directed cable TV, ATM machines, streetlights, most of everything else, even our local and state governments do, is hooked up to satellite communications now.
Well, it sounds like a great argument for that treaty that you talked about, the Paris Treaty, the Prevention of the Arms Race in Outer Space Treaty, to be ratified, or at least to be completed.
Exactly. And so, again, we have to keep asking the question, why is the United States and Israel blocking that treaty at the United Nations Conference on Disarmament in Geneva? Why? Well, there's only one answer. It's because the United States thinks that it can make a lot of money off a new arms race in space, and that it will be the master of space, which I think is delusional.
We're talking about the proposal by the Trump administration to create a space force, a new branch of the U.S. military. Our guest is Bruce Gagnon with the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. This is 88.5 FM. Bruce, what's your website so people know if they want to look at that film that you suggested and get up to date on this, all this information?
Yeah, space4peace.org. And the four is either the number or the word, either way, spaceforpeace.org. In October 6th through 13th, we're holding our annual Keep Space for Peace Week every year in October for many, many years. We organize this week of educational events and protests all over the world. And we invite people locally to hold some kind of an event, show a film, hold a rally, hold a protest outside of one of the weapons corporations that's involved in this work, and bring these issues to the public's attention. And so we have our poster on there. This year our theme is No Space Force. So the poster is quite an interesting poster, a picture of Trump dressed as Darth Vader. On our website at spaceforpeace.org.
Bruce, do you ever get scientists from NASA saying, Bruce, I support the mission of your group, the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space? Does anybody from the inside ever come out and say, you know, I appreciate the civilian mission, but I don't like the military side of the mission?
Oh, we've heard that a few times over the years. There was an engineer that, when I lived in Orlando years ago, he worked at then called Martin Marietta, now called Lockheed Martin. He was building the Pershing 2 nuclear missile there. He called and asked, told me he wanted to quit because of his conscience, and would I help him? And so I organized a news conference for him where he announced he was quitting. So, you know, that's happened. I do hear from people from time to time, but I think most people are afraid. Either they're afraid or they've swallowed the pill and believe that what they're doing is righteous and exciting, and the pay is good.
So we're getting a lot of emails. DeMarco writes this, your guest's opinion. What is your guest's opinion on President Trump's foolhardy rush into a new nuclear arms race? If we have nukes, why can't we use them, according to the president? Is he suicidal or ignorant or something else?
Well, I think what he's referring to is the announcement that we're going to spend $1 trillion in the coming years upgrading and renewing our nuclear forces. But this didn't start with Trump. Actually, it was Obama who introduced that, got it passed into the budget, and Trump is now, acting like he had something to do with it, and is certainly saying that he's on board with that particular program. Is he suicidal? One must wonder. At times, he's certainly unstable, I think we have to, even though we're clearly critical of Trump on virtually every level, we also have to recognize that this whole nuclear arms race and now this space arms race isn't just a Trump thing. It's not just a Republican thing. That in fact, both parties are committed to this idea of American exceptionalism and American dominance of the planet and now of the universe beyond. And I think it's very dangerous. And we've got to get rid of that notion that America should singularly rule the world and dictate things to the rest of the world. The rest of the world's not, they're not going along with it, and they're not going to lay down. And if the United States wants to continue to pursue this idea of American dominance, then it will likely lead to a war that will finish us off. So we've got to be, I think, critical of both parties and their role in all of creating all of this mess that we're in today.
Well, the current Outer Space Treaty of 1967, which designates space as global commons to be used for peaceful purposes, Russia, China, and the U.S. are all parties to that 1967 treaty, but our guest says it needs to be updated so that there's not a further expansion of militarization in space. Bruce Gagnon is our guest. So, Bruce, what would it cost? I've read a lot of articles leading up to our interview today trying to figure out how much it's going to cost to create a space force. Do you have any idea what it's costing us right now and what it would cost in the future to create a space force? And then ultimately, you said it would be the largest industrial project in the history of the world. Give us some numbers.
Well, that's the thing. There aren't a lot of numbers around. They don't offer very many numbers. But we do know that since Reagan came out in the early 80s with the Star Wars idea, that they've spent hundreds and hundreds of billions, with a B, billions of dollars on developing the technologies that have got us from that place there in 1983 to where we are today. And that's money that could have gone for education and health care and putting in a rail system through the entire state of Florida like the voters demanded many years ago and was completely ignored by the politicians, helping us get out of our gas-guzzling cars, help us in a way solve for climate change, which is our big problem today that is not being addressed whatsoever. So our call is that all of this money that is wasted on a lark on this notion that we're going to control the planet and now space, it could be dealing with our real problem, climate change. And so we need to be calling for the conversion of this military-industrial complex to build rail and solar and wind and tidal power systems that help us deal with those problems. Now, even the Air Force today says it would be a colossal mistake to create this Space Force because it would duplicate all these bureaucracies. You know, there are already Air Force Space Command, Navy Space Command, Army Space Command. And in fact, there's competition between Colorado Springs, where the Air Force Space Command is located, and Alabama, Huntsville, Alabama, where the Army Space Command is located. In fact, it's the congressman from Alabama that's introduced the Space Force proposal. So there's this regional competition between tribes, if you will, here in the United States to see, hey, we're going to be in charge of this whole program. In Huntsville, they call themselves the Pentagon of the South. And so there's this, you know, sort of rising southern, we might have lost the Civil War, but we're coming back. And so there's a lot of this kind of stuff going on here. And they don't really care so much about how much money they're going to waste, how many social programs are going to have to be cut and destroyed in order to pay for it. And so the American people really need to intervene now and speak up and say, look, we don't want an arms race in space. We don't want to destroy the planet. We want to protect this beautiful planet that we live on. And the way to do that is to convert us away from this maddening, ever-ending war system that we are leading. Let's face it, we are leading that in the world today.
So are we talking about hundreds of billions or tens of billions or trillions of dollars? What's your guess?
I think over time, if it went through, it would be trillions and trillions of dollars, because it's already been hundreds of billions of dollars, and they would be. Let's face it: you create a new service. You got to have your own West Point. You got to have your own Air Force Academy. You have to have your own Space Force Academy. You've got to have all these new generals and officers. You got to have buildings. You got to have. Your own computer systems, your administrative centers, it's just unbelievable. Just administratively to operate it would be a massive expenditure. And then the technology that would, now that we've got it, we've got to have the best rockets, we've got to have the best, we got to launch new satellites, we got to launch this, we got to launch that. I mean, they'd be coming to Congress with a waiting list a mile long, and it would be hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars. And again, where will that money come from? Well, they've already told us. In the Space News industry publication that I referred to earlier, they said, we've got to go to Washington and find a dedicated funding source to pay for it, and we have. Entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and what's left of welfare. These are the programs they're going after.
That's actually printed in their own publication?
Yeah.
And do you have a link to that on your website?
No, it's pre-linked days, but...
Okay. But that was the initial intent. Getting a lot of emails, Rafi writes, I knew Bruce from the Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice when he lived here some 30 years ago. How does he keep up his energy for these fights when the forces of evil are so skillfully arrayed against any grassroots effort to fight the military-industrial complex? Does he feel we've made any progress in the past decades?
Well, it's a good question. It's a fair question. I'm stubborn, I guess. I like to tell the story that in 1989, I came home one day to Orlando to my house, and my 9-year-old son met me at the door with a gas mask on. And in his most serious voice, he said to me, Dad, it's okay if Galileo blows up on launch at Cape Canaveral with plutonium on board. I could just wear this gas mask the rest of my life. And that literally broke my heart. And it was in that moment that I said, I have to spend every waking moment with every ounce of energy I have to make sure that this insanity never happens.
We should say that Galileo was powered by decaying plutonium on board, and then did it go to Jupiter eventually? It did leave the U.S. orbit safely, or the Earth orbit safely, sorry.
That's correct. And, you know, I come to find out in years later, there was this is sort of an aside, but it's an interesting aside. There was a week's delay of the launch of Galileo at the Space Center. And so I kept taking people back there every day because there were all this international media. We had been in federal court to try to block it. So there was a lot of media in those days covering this launch. And so we'd go back there every day and hold a press conference, stand around with our signs. And so for a week this went on, and finally they launched it. Come to find out, it was Julian Assange from WikiLeaks. It was his first hack that he ever did. He hacked into the NASA launch system and shut it down for a week before they were able to fix the hack and get on with it. So quite an amazing thing. I just wrote a blog about it about a week or so ago, and with a link to it, a book that he and another woman wrote describing the whole situation.
Now, Bruce, I know you're recovering from surgery, and I know you're in a lot of pain from that surgery, so I don't want to keep you too long, but do you have a few more minutes?
Yeah, I'm okay.
All right. Joey writes this. I just went to your website, and I looked for the film, but there was a message when I clicked on the link said the film was unavailable. That's Joey, who apparently just went to spaceforpeace.org and tried to look for that film, Pax Americana.
I'll go there right now.
Okay.
Tell you what the scoop is.
All right.
I would just suggest going to YouTube and Googling Pax Americana and the weaponization of space, and I'm sure you'll find it there.
Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. We're talking about the militarization of space, the president's proposal to build a U.S. Space Force, and our guest is an opponent of nuclear weapons and nuclear power in space and weapons in space. He's Bruce Gagnon with the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. And this is 88.5 FM. Let's go to Jay, who's in Pinellas County. Jay, what's your question for Bruce?
Well, I have an observation for Bruce. Thank you very much for what you're doing, Bruce. And I've been following you over the years. And the current space farce idea by Trump is ridiculous. Back in the 1930s, the observation is that we did have a fifth seal of the U.S. military. It was a non-armed force that was used, that the military were ordered to use to work on our environment, called the Civilian Conservation Corps. And I think that would be the sixth seal today that we could bring back, from the fifth to the sixth. The Air Force was the fifth seal. So if we could bring that, and then all the services could be working on to save our environment, an earthly thing to do, not something outer space. So I just want to mention that. And I have a website, too, and it's gocci.org, and I have petitions going to Congress to bring back the CCC. There is a bill in Congress by Marcy Kaptur, and if we go blue this fall, that might become a reality, and it might knock out Trump's idea of a space force. We have to have to protect our planet and to save our planet. We should put our young people to do simple work to save it. Thank you.
All right, Jay, thanks a lot. Thanks for your comments. Bruce, do you want to add anything there?
Well, just to say that that's what I would call a counter-demand, and that's what we need right now, so it's right on. I want to tell a story real quickly. There's a book called Arming the Heavens, The Hidden Military Agenda for Space by Jack Mano. And in there, he tells a story about Operation Paperclip, where after World War II, the Nazi scientists that created the V-1 and V-2 rockets for Hitler were brought to the U.S., to Huntsville, Alabama, to create the U.S. space program. Werner von Braun, the scientist, and along with him came Major General Walter Dornberger, who was Hitler's liaison between Hitler and von Braun. So he was basically von Braun's boss. Well, Dornberger became a vice president of Bell Aerospace in New York. And in 1958, this Nazi, Major General Walter Dornberger, testified before a congressional hearing. And he said that America's top space priority ought to be to, quote, conquer, occupy, keep, and utilize space between the Earth and the Moon. In an address to a National Missile Industry Conference, he dismissed NASA's early spaceflight program as space stunts and urged that more attention be given to space weaponry. Gentlemen, he told the missile men, I didn't come to this country to lose the Third World War. I lost too. So I would suggest that this vision of the Space Force and U.S. dominance in space is really the Nazi prophecy enfleshed now in the official proclamation of the President of the United States. But it comes from the Nazi rocket team that was brought here to this country, Hitler's people, to create the U.S. space program. And I've always said, when you bring 1,500 top Nazi operatives after World War II to the U.S. and weave them into the military-industrial complex, is there an ideological contamination that follows? And I think the answer is clear.
Let's go to Terry in Bradenton. Terry, you're on. What's your question for Bruce Gagnon? Hi, Terry, you're on.
I appreciate his very informative information, and I just want to break in with a reminder that they are the primaries, not to detract from what he's telling us about space programs and what have you. But if you've declared a party, I'm just hoping everybody will get out there and place their primary votes, especially in light of our waterways situation in this state.
All right, Terry, thanks a lot. Thanks for that. Yeah, it really is important to go out and vote. And even if you're not a member of a political party, there are still judicial races and school board races on, I think, ballots in every county. So even if you're an NPA or an independent, it's still a good day to go out and vote for a school board and some of those judicial races. Well, if you've got a question for our guest, Bruce Gagnon, from the Coalition, the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space, you can call us up, 813-239-9663. Bruce, you mentioned, we've been talking about one of the things that militaries here in the U.S. and in China and other places want to do is blow up satellites to cause problems for the communication systems in other countries. Right now, there are people stationed in our government, and I gather other governments, who are tracking every piece of debris in space. And the debris in space now numbers in the, if I'm right, tens of thousands. And every one of those lost wrenches or screws or, you know, blown up missile parts has to be tracked so it doesn't fly into the International Space Station or fly into another satellite that's necessary so we can track our weather. I wonder if you know the costs of that, and can you give us a little bit of background? I mean, that's got to be a lot of people who are just sitting watching their computers all day tracking this space debris.
That's right. It's massive. One time, I don't know how we were able to pull this off, but we got a tour of one of the Falcon Air Force base. At that time, it was called Falcon Air Force Base in Colorado, whose job it was to track all of this space debris that they say that there's now up to 500,000 pieces that they can't even see. It's, you know, tiny little specks of paint and things like that, but traveling at 15,000 miles an hour, it's still very dangerous. So it's an enormous cost. And it's not getting any better, let's put it that way. And right now, there are more than 3,600 satellites in space. They think by 2022, there's going to be more than 10,000. And what's happening now is that the parking lot, if you will, is filling up. There's very little room anymore in some of the orbits, especially lower Earth orbit, 4 more satellites. And the United States is saying, well, one way we're going to get around this, having our satellites taken out, is we're going to stop making the big ones. We're going to make a lot of little small ones. We're going to launch multiple small ones up there, you know. So they're going to take up the space in the parking lot. And it's just, there's no thought whatsoever to the environmental implications of how space is being used. It's just really crazy. So, but the U.S. has itself more than 1,700 operational satellites today orbiting the planet. And again, virtually everything that is done on this planet is dependent on these satellites. So any war in space is just going to shut everything down. I want to respond to the caller that, or the person that emailed that said they couldn't find Pax Americana in our list of films on our website, and I just checked, and they're right that that one's gone blank. But again, just go to YouTube, type in the words Pax Americana and the weaponization of space, and you'll find a good copy, and I'll have our webmaster fix that right away. Thank you for letting me know.
Well, our phone producer today here on WMNF is Jan Simpson. Jan, thanks a lot for coming in. And let's go to Tim, our next caller from Dunedin. Tim, you're on with Bruce Gagnon.
Good morning, Robin. Thank you for having me. This is wonderful today. My question basically is to your guest that with all the debris that is going out there, inevitably will become more vast as it goes along, is there anybody designing a vehicle that is going to be able to possibly maintain cleanup on that? I know it's a little sidebar on what we're talking about weaponization.
Like a giant vacuum cleaner in space?
I guess. Yeah. I mean, it's bigger than me. I'm small-time electronics, not big-time. So,
well, that's a good question.
I'll take the answer off the air. Thanks,
Greg. All right, Tim, thanks a lot. That's a great question because, as you mentioned before, Bruce, if the problem gets worse through war in space, we could be trapped on the planet. Future generations could be trapped on the planet. Our spaceships couldn't even pass through that that area, that zone where all the space debris is.
That's right. I read all the time about one company or the other who's working on some kind of application to try to deal with that, but so far nothing has worked. First of all, you have to be able to identify where it all is, and secondly, have the kind of resources to, if you can even find some kind of vacuum cleaner, you've got to have the resources to be able to put it all in motion. So far, there isn't anything happening, and many people are saying it's just not likely that it's going to happen. So time will tell. It's sort of like that plastic gyre out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, right, where it's a huge area where all this plastic is just rotating and collecting, and animals are eating it and dying.
But I did see the other day that there is a plan to try to scoop up at least 50% of that plastic. That there is, that somebody's come up with a buoy system. Anyway, it's a long story. Bruce, I want to ask you about one other thing that you've worked on, and that is you worked on a campaign called, I believe, Bring the Money Home, and that was that you wanted to divert money that was spent on foreign military operations to bring it back home for domestic uses in Maine and other states in New England. Am I getting the name right? And tell us more about the campaign.
Yeah, it's called Bring Our War Dollars Home. The whole idea is that, Maine is, just for example, it has the oldest housing stock in the country. Maine has the oldest population in the country. And so there are severe social problems in this state that are totally neglected. And because of the harsh winters we have here, our roads, as you can imagine, when you're freezing and thawing and freezing and thawing, the roads buckle and begin to fall apart. They have to be fixed quite frequently. And there are now towns in this state that are talking about getting rid of asphalt and going back to dirt roads because they can't afford to keep fixing them. And so literally our state is a friggin' mess when it comes to infrastructure. Our roads, the majority of our bridges are in dangerous repair. So it's a big problem. Our schools are closing down or falling apart. Hospitals are closing down across the state. And people are, working two and three jobs, you know, for very low minimum wage, trying to piece together a living. So our contention would bring our war dollars home was that we have first obligation to take care of people here rather than overturning governments around the world and creating conflicts and everything else, and that we need to bring all of that money that we waste on these endless wars back to this country. And in a place like Bath Iron Works, where they're building these Navy destroyers to be sent out as part of U.S. first strike attack planning, at this shipyard, right where I live in this town, we should be building rail systems, getting us up and down the state of Maine. Maine, years ago, old-timers talk about how they used to have a rail system in the state that connected every corner of the state, even little wayward towns way up in the north where it's, you know, all woods, where there's more trees than people. But they had a rail system that connected all over the state. So we need to go back to that and be building that kind of thing, be building offshore wind turbines. The Gulf of Maine has more wind than any other place in North America. Norway wanted to come and build a offshore wind turbine farm out there, but our governor, who's mixed up with the oil companies, didn't want it. So he basically kicked them out. And so we could be building offshore wind turbines and building tidal power systems that all would help us deal with our real problem, climate change. So this was what our campaign was about.
Was it successful? Were you able to convince? How did it play out? Were you trying to get people to vote for candidates that supported Bring Our War Dollars Home?
We were trying to integrate it into the public consciousness, and because that is always the first requirement before you're going to have any political change. You have to have the public, you know, kind of come around to the idea, and they begin to articulate it, and then it becomes an unstoppable thing. And so I think we had a lot of great success getting it deep into the public consciousness. But as I think we're finding all across the country, both parties now are so locked into the military-industrial complex that we can't make any progress when it comes to politicians. We have a liberal Democrat who's our congresswoman here in the 1st District of Maine, who's fantastic on every single issue except military. And she comes to every christening and begs and votes for every appropriations for more war, for more ships, and everything else. And that's what the Democrats do. And so we're not able to make any political change, any political progress at this point in time, because of the fact that the military-industrial complex essentially has taken captive of Congress, and that almost all Congress members, with very few exceptions, including so-called liberal Democrats, are under the control of this lobby.
Well, the problem is that the U.S. doesn't build as many appliances or electronics as we used to, or cars as we used to, but the one industry, the factory industry, that's remained strong is military.
That's right. You know, during the Bush administration, I saw a presentation by a guy named Thomas Barnett, and I began to follow him. He's a futurist, and he came out with a new book called The Pentagon's New Map. And he basically said that under corporate globalization of the world economy, every country is going to have a different role. Some people are going to make things, make shoes, refrigerators, cars, cell phones, TVs, and some are going to make weapons and war. And he said that will be our job in America. We will send our kids off to fight on behalf of corporate interests for control of oil and water and minerals. And we will make weapons. So today our number one industrial export product is weapons. And when weapons are your number one industrial export product, what is your global marketing strategy for that product line?
Bruce, we're out of time, but people want to find out more about your group, Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. How can they find out more?
Just go to our website, spaceforpeace.org. You can also follow me in day-to-day, my work, my ruminations, what I'm doing. I write a blog that I post to every day. It's called Organizing Notes. Organizing Notes. Just Google that along with my name, and you'll see what I'm up to all the time. And if you want to get our newsletter, send us a message. You can do that from the website. There's a way to send me an email and get on our mailing list. I'll send you a recent copy of a newsletter.
All right, Bruce Gagnon, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Rob.
Thanks. Great to have you back on WMNF. Bruce is the coordinator of the Global Network Against Nuclear Weapons and Power in Space, or Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. He used to live here in Florida. He's a Vietnam-era military veteran. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up, 813-238-8001, and record your message on extension 115. We'll play you.